Studio 360.
A play called White Noise just premiered at the Public Theater in New York City. It's written by the Pulitzer Prize winner Susan Laurie Parks. And it happens to be the best new play I've seen in ages. White Noise is set right now about four men and women who've been close friends since college. Two of them white, two of them black, all educated, progressive, urban professionals. David Diggs from Hamilton and the 2018 film Blindspotting plays Leo, who's a black artist. Before the play begins, Leo's been strolling through the city and some police stopped him for no good reason and then roughed him up. And then the drama gets fantastical. Leo comes up with this over-the-top idea to protect himself. He asks his best friend, Ralph, to buy him, enslave him. Because if he's a white man's property, he figures, the white world might leave him alone. Susan Laurie Parks, David Diggs are here with me. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much for having us, man.
So, Susan Laurie.
Yes.
That implausible premise. That could have gone in any number of directions. How fully formed was it, and when did it pop into your head?
It popped into my head in the Ansbacher Theater, where it is now playing, during a performance, several performances I watched over and over of the last play I had there, Father Comes Home from the Wars. The enslaved man who's the hero is standing there wondering what his life is going to be like in the future when he is free and when he is approached by law enforcement individuals. And when he tells them, I own myself, will that be enough? And his friend Smith, a Union soldier, says, you know, I don't know if that's going to be enough. I don't know if they'll let you go. And I sat in the theater night after night watching that show and thought, oh, I have to write a show about the future.
So you inspired yourself.
Kind of, yes.
If nobody else is doing it for you, you know, you got
to. No, that's not true. That's not true. But, you know, I started thinking about what kind of play is it? Is it, you know, people say naturalism, surrealism. It's supernatural. That's what I think it is.
Except that's makes people think there's ghosts involved and stuff.
Well, scratch that then.
But did you think, my God, this is going to be hard to pull off? I mean, you were drawn to problematic, like, how is this going to happen?
Yeah.
Ideas. But this one was a whopper.
This is the hardest, this is the most difficult play I've ever written. Because, not just because of the premise, but because I wanted to very much hold in my head, in my heart, in my mind, in my guts, the opinions and of four very different characters. But nobody gets thrown under the bus. Everybody gets a solo. Everybody gets a moment where they, an extended monologue, where they get to talk about their feelings.
David, did you know Susan Laurie's work?
She's been my favorite playwright since I was a teenager, so this was...
I'm embarrassed.
And how did you get to it as a teenager? Did you act in one of her plays?
No. I used to do... a monologue from Top Dog Underdog for auditions, though.
Aside from the brilliant writing and your brilliant acting technique, David, it seems to me your incredible likability on stage. I don't know if you're likable in real life, but certainly on stage.
Much less.
You are incredibly likable up there as playing Leo.
I think it's important for us to like Leo off the top because he's the first person whose head we get inside. In the sort of experiment of empathy that theater is, like, we kind of have to, everyone has to get on that ride, I think, with Leo, because his solo is first. It's a conscious thing to be pretty interactive with the audience and to be charming and to be, but also that makes sense for Leo, who is a charming, funny, successful person who is all of a sudden not able to depend on that. Good school, good grades, right? And as charming as he is and all that did not stop him from getting roughed up by the police.
Right.
I like what you talk about, the experiment of empathy, because if Leo's solo at the beginning of the show is the beginning of our experiment with empathy, we stretch that as far as we can, because toward the end of the show, we have the character Ralph, played by Tom Sadowski, his solo, which is of a very different feeling.
Right. He finally taps into his latent white anger and resentment, and it's sinister and terrifying.
Sinister, terrifying, honest.
Yeah.
And he's telling us where he's at. the character of Ralph was, in writing it, the most vocal, the most willing to speak his piece. And I was very grateful for wherever that character came from.
Mm-hmm. The choice you made that certainly made me feel, okay, I'm going to buy this,
right,
was when you decided that there would be a term limit on this enslavement period of David's character.
Huh.
Wait, how's this going? What? Huh? And no, it's going to be this period of time. That made me think, okay.
Right.
I'll buy this.
Right. Oh, goody, goody. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that must have been...
Look at you. Look what you just said. I'll buy this. And so Ralph might have agreed to buy Leo,
yeah,
because of the same thing.
Yeah, well, maybe so.
But we got you.
We are living in a real life political moment that if we'd seen it in fiction 4 years ago, we'd go, nah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would seem almost as crazy as the reality of your play.
Right.
Right? How does, let's be blunt, the new outness and prominence of white supremacy in America affect how you wrote it, if it did?
Yeah. I mean, I started it, you know, in 2014. So those elements in our society, in my experience, you know, have always been there.
Right.
I've, you know, from jump, always been aware of the
sure.
white supremacy element in our society.
But the rocks were turned over a bit more.
Exactly. The rocks have been turned over a bit more. So it was not, did make it more difficult to write. But I think it makes it more difficult to hear, because I think in when I go to the show and watch you guys, the people we're talking to in the theater are, you know, people who have attended the public theater. And they are a certain kind of folk who are ready to, folk who are accustomed to examining themselves. That's my guess.
And most stereotypes are true.
Yeah. Well, and so when we're asking them to consider the possibility of you going down this road, that might be more difficult for them to hear. And also, like Misha.
Well, that's a whole other thing.
That's a whole other, yeah.
That this character who has her online show,
yeah,
in which she, you know, it's a version of what? Minstrelsy that she does?
A version of it's marketing.
She performs on her show this kind of cartoony version of American blackness that isn't at all the real her.
Yeah, considering the possibility of a black woman capitalizing on the bad stuff.
But also, look, I'm a rapper. Like, I perform my blackness all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all do to varying degrees. I think like the most sort of transgressive thing about her show is that it happens to be called Ask a Black, which, you know, which like puts
this,
kind of
this
a
character
point.
Show in the play.
Misha's show.
Yeah.
But I think other than that, what she's doing is not really any different than things that not only do we do for commercial reasons, but also that we do for status reasons within our own communities. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I perform my blackness in a different way around the black side of my family than I do around the white side of my family.
Yeah.
And we're all related.
Yeah.
Right.
One of my favorite films of last year was the movie you co-wrote and co-starred in, Blindspotting, in which you play a black guy with a white best friend with a fraught relationship, and there's an episode of police violence. And I thought, he's been here in the vicinity before. Did you see that movie and starting to do this play as connected pieces?
I mean, I think a lot of artists that I love are trying to examine where this feeling of terror comes from and where the feeling of being unsafe comes from, and trying to be really honest about all of our own participations in that. It is complicated, and we pretend that it's not, so that I think all of us who sort of fancy ourselves woke are tend to glaze over how difficult that actually is.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be like, this is how we are because this is how we are.
Had you read, did you know the book that came out as you were writing this play, The Sellout, Paul Beatty's book?
I know of Paul Beatty, of course, but I hadn't read it.
Yeah.
Somebody the other day said, yeah, it's like The Cell. And I was like, oh, I'm
well,
sorry.
It's this guy who in contemporary L.A., you know, resegregates his part of L.A. and ends up having a slave. And I thought,
right,
wow, this is like a genre.
Well, they did that on Boondock. There was an episode of Boondocks. Did you see that?
And then I thought of Bamboozled, the Spike Lee movie. There is kind of a, like, somebody could write their PhD thesis on this new genre.
And now many will.
Yeah.
and it's work that I really don't think would have or could have been done before, like, 20 years ago.
Oscar said something to me when we were having dinner a while ago.
Oscar Eustace, your director.
Yeah, which is that particularly for theater, like every play, when it is performed, is in conversation with the now, right? It's the difference between doing a play and a movie, which is a time capsule, right? Oh, and I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it also speaks something to when plays are written, not mm-hmm. that you can't perform them later, but that they are having a different conversation later mm-hmm. because they're in conversation with the moment that you're performing them,
right.
Which is why you have to make changes to them, and not changes to the words, but update your thinking on what this play mm-hmm. means. And so I think there is something about a like post political correctness movement moment where, you know, where we've all gotten so far beyond that that we're frustrated by the term. Now, like, PC is a joke at this point, but when I was a teenager, it wasn't, you know.
Right,
so
right.
There's a lot more complication of language and terminology because right. we've created all of these terms as sort of a fortress for ourselves to feel good.
I haven't mentioned that this, I think, is probably the greatest play ever written about bowling. the first one I've seen, too, to tell you the truth. But David's character and his pal Ralph, played by Thomas Sadowski, were college bowlers, and Ralph's a bowling alley heir, and they bowl. They bowl throughout the whole 3 hours. Tell me about making that choice.
You know, my dad was in the Army, and we moved around a lot. And wherever we went, there was always a bowling alley. And bowling, when I was growing up, was an activity that my parents appreciated, partly because it was a place where they could be social when they were new on the post, on the base, you know. But also there's a bowling alley, I've never seen it, but I heard, in the White House somewhere, there's a bowling alley. So it feels to me like this American subterranean, it's maybe a part of the Underground Railroad of America. Uh-huh. I just made that up. But I'm thinking, you know, part of the Underground Railroad, maybe a piece of it is a bowling alley.
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny because bowling is kind of funny.
It is.
But why?
I know.
A lot of reasons. Oh. And then it would be classist of me to enumerate them. But
no.
I thought it was whatever reason, and I didn't know your childhood military brat familiarity with bowling, but it seems like a perfect thing to, because there's this kind of kinetic violence of tossing 15-pound balls, which seems like expresses the play. Like mm-hmm. it's badminton would have been a bad choice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is true.
Susan Murray, your play, I haven't seen or read all of your plays, but I've seen or read most of them. They tend not to be strictly realistic.
Right.
This one among them. Your novel is pretty realistic.
Yeah.
Your screenwriting is pretty realistic.
Yeah.
With theater, do you decide, okay, I'm going to do things in theater that can only be done in theater? Is that the way, reason you go there?
Of the forms in which I write, theater is the closest to real life. And real life to me is not realistic. To me, real life is trippy. If you really look at it, there's some trippy stuff going on.
Huh. So it's a higher realism.
Yeah. What are the words? Heightened realism, heightened naturalism,
heightened is
supernaturalism,
good, or
right?
Super realism.
Super real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not supernatural.
Not supernatural. Okay. Okay. Well, won't say
somebody
that.
Got to that first.
I like that. Yeah, the ghosts.
So. So this has worked out well, having this kid who fell in love with your work when he was 17 be in your show. It's like a happy ending.
Or it's a happy beginning,
right.
I think.
It's the beginning of a beautiful friendship?
Pleased and
so.
Thrilled. And I'm a little, like, not embarrassed, but my cheeks are red right now.
You can see Susan Laurie Park's play White Noise with David Diggs at the Public Theater in New York.